This is the Morgan Report with David Morgan. For the latest in precious metals investing, gold, silver, the economy, and more, go to themorganreport.com.
David Morgan with you with the weekly perspective for the week ending March 8th, 2019. Well, let's start again with the stock market. We are looking at a bull market in stocks, which has reached its 10th anniversary as of Friday and is the longest in modern history. The economic expansion hit its 10th anniversary. The economic expansion will hit the 10th anniversary in June, and this is nearing record as well. The weekly S&P 500 chart suggests perhaps we peaked last year. I'm still not that bullish on the stock market going forward, but time will tell. The consumer discretionary spider fell back to the 200-day moving average this last week, and the apparel retailers are leading the S&P retail spiders lower. Amazon.com really isn't doing a whole lot, and of course, it's one of the stalwarts there of late. And the consumer cyclicals ratio is also weakening. So the internals on the stock market really don't look that good. 10 years of expansion record. I think it's long overdue for a correction. But again, with these markets that are more manipulations in markets these days, time will tell. And as you can see, the March edition of the Morgan Report was out over the weekend, last weekend. And I won't show you the whole thing, obviously. It's a paid report, but I started off something that was kind of near and dear to my heart. I was asked to do a debate on silver as money, and I talked about that on these weekly updates a few times. Don't want to belabor the point, but it got me thinking a little bit more about, you know, the real true monetary metal of history is silver, not gold, and also how much, the silver standard actually played in monetary history. Of course, this is all past history, and no one really pays any attention to it, but you cannot change the past. I mean, you might write it in differently than the reality, but as far as we know from best sources available, the silver standard prevailed for a very long time, and China's actually the last to go off the silver standard, believe it or not. First article up is from Zero Hedge. U.S. consumer just hit a brick wall. Here's why in 15 charts. First of all, this is talking about the U.S. consumer, and the article starts off when it comes to growth dynamo behind the global economy. Nobody can match the U.S. consumer, not even China. Accounting for trillions in annual spending, the U.S. consumer represents roughly 70% of U.S. GDP and is also responsible for roughly 17% of global GDP, slightly ahead of the entire country of China. Now, let's think about this for a moment. 70% of the economy is based on Americans going out and buying stuff. Now, some of this is necessities. I mean, we all have to eat. You know, we need shelter, water, you know. So I'm not going to comment on the needs. What I'm going to comment on is the propaganda that gets everybody to buy stuff they don't need, don't want, and actually have to go out and rent a storage unit to put the stuff in because they don't really want to give it away or sell it. They're not really sure what they're going to do with it. In other words, consuming 70%. I want to go a little further on this thought. Let's think about subsistence farming. Let's go back to like 1810 when I think it was 83% of the American population farmed for a living. And if you farmed and you grew your own food and you consumed 70% of it and only saved 30% of it, and then the next year you went out and planted and something disastrous happened like a weather event or insects or anything that can happen in the real world, you would have a pretty tough time getting around to the following year to replant because you only have 30% savings. I mean, 70% is a huge number just to get stuff. So anyway, moving on, I think I made my point, hopefully. Here we show, the first graph shows, you know, how much the U.S. consumer spends. And now the other charts, I'm going to go through these very quickly. You should read the article yourself. Fed hikes beginning to bite, Aggregate hours worked declining in sectors selling big ticket items. So you're seeing a workforce decline. And so that's not an upbeat thing. credit card conditions tightening, demand for consumer loans is coming down. So the demand for money, especially for consumer money, buying stuff, is on the decline. And that has to do with a lot of people are broke. And it also has to do with the increase in interest rates, which really haven't been that substantial. Nonetheless, the trend is coming down. Consumers are buying less, borrowing less. Credit card interest at the highest level in decades, pushing about 17%. When you have these credit cards at 17%, you're making your banker rich. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And use the rule of 72, divide 17 into 72 and see when that money doubles. It's scary. Auto loan interest increased by 2 points in 2018, went from roughly 3% up to 5%. That's a big increase in percentage. And of course, it curtails car sales. Household interest payments rising 15% year over year. The trend in interest payments as a share of household spending is worrying. In other words, it's increasing rather rapidly. That's a pretty sharp up curve, as you can see. Certainly not as high as it's been at some points in the past. Nonetheless, the trend is showing that the consumers basically are in trouble. Downside risk to car sales. Been that way for a long time. A lot of these car sales are sort of similar to, but not exactly alike, the housing bubble, where, you know, if you could breathe, you could get a loan on a house. The ninja loans, no job, no credit check, no anything. The auto industry has done, similar and not quite as bad in my view, but basically they've given loans to pay probably people that were not as credit worthy as they should be for the auto loans. This is going to come back and bite. Downside risk to home sales. Obviously, both autos and homes are bought on leverage. You have to borrow money to make the purchase. And if interest rates change, then it's more of a burden. Retail sales points to downside risk in consumer spending. See, it's just starting to roll over. Nothing like it happened in the financial crisis that you can see here. But nonetheless, the trend is starting to change. More delinquent credit card loans. This is a little scary. Going, you know, from 2018 around, you know, what, 2.25% up to 3%. That's not huge. Percentage-wise, it's pretty significant, but it's, again, the trend. So people are getting squeezed. People are not able to make their payments on a lot of things. And, of course, here's another one, delinquent auto loans, and that's increasing. And this is to be expected, as I said a moment ago, because a lot of these loans are probably to not the most creditworthy people, but they gave them the car anyway. They said make the payments, and they started making the payments and then found out later that they couldn't continue making the payments. The credit card cycle is leading the economic cycle. Economic slowdown risk is rising. As I've been saying, I'm not really that bullish on the stock market. I am moderately bullish on the metals because in uncertainty, the safe haven status of the metals comes to the fore, more people participate in that market. Credit cards, millennials facing more financial challenges. It shows the percent balance on age group. You can see the 18 to 29 are leading the pack up here. And of course they are. I mean, the amount of good paying jobs and college educated people aren't matching. There's a lot of people that spent a lot of time and borrowed money to get that college degree, thinking they're going to get that good job, and they get out of school and they don't. And that's the way it is. That's today's world. So, of course, it's biting them probably the hardest. And this is really something I guess I'll comment on a little further. Normally, for decades and decades, every generation had hopes and usually on aggregate a higher living standard than their previous generation. So, you know, my parents live better than their, you know, than my grandparents, and I'm doing better than my parents, which, yeah, roughly. But the point is, everyone over the trend was obvious, higher and higher standard of living for everybody, generally speaking. I mean, not every single person on aggregate, not true anymore. I mean, the millennials now, you know, how many are going to buy a car are going to be able to buy a house? Some are giving up buying a car. Now, if the technological changes with, you know, the Uber situation, I mean, my youngest daughter lives in a major city and she only drives a car on the weekends. She takes the bus. She finds it a lot more convenient to take public transportation to work, get off, walk into work, not have to find a parking place, not have to pay for parking, not have to have all the stress of trying to find that spot or pay for it or all that stuff. She just takes public transportation. On the weekends, she's willing to, you know, go out and drive her own personal vehicle. Just a comment. And the last one here, decline recently in domestic business sentiment. So businesses also are saying, you know what, things are not looking so good. when businesses say things aren't looking so good, do they borrow more or they borrow less? Well, obviously they borrow less. So enough said. I think that was probably the best thing I could show you this week for the financial update part of this weekly perspective. So moving into the metals, I think I'll talk about gold first. I have sent an update to our members and publicly said it a couple times, but gold breached the $1,300 level, which I thought would hold. It did not. It broke it Friday ago, and it's worked its way back up near that level. It's holding in that first resistance range right now. Time will tell, but obviously some more work ahead. I do think, again, that we'll see $1,350 or higher this year. In fact, I'm expecting a little better than that for gold this year. Again, the market knows more than anyone. I think one of the more interesting things that came out on gold this week came from GATA, Gold Antitrust Action Committee. The headline here is Futures Exchange Operator Renews Discounts for Secret Trading by Governments and Central Banks. That's Chris Powell's headline. And what Chris points out in this article is market manipulation by government and central banks is right out in the open again, hiding in plain sight in the confidence that mainstream financial news organizations, financial newsletter writers, and gurus who purport to bring technical analysis to bear on the market will avert at the gaze. Of course, I'm very up on this, and I'm going to explain my take on it. It's a little different than Chris's, but facts are the facts. I won't argue it. For as GATA's friend Jim Anderson of SG Bullion in Michigan pointed out this week, CME Group, operator of the major U.S. futures exchanges, has just renewed, quote-unquote, central bank incentive program in which governments and central banks receive discounts, and this is Chris's words, for serendipitously trading all major futures contracts. Well, I wouldn't use that word, but they do get a discount. And reading further, Chris points out, again, I'm not going to argue facts, on page 6 of his 2019 10-K, filed with the SEC, and the CME Group continues to acknowledge that, quote, the customer base of our derivatives exchange includes professional traders, financial institutions, institutional individual investors, major corporations, manufacturers, producers, governments, and central banks, end quote. Now, Chris made kind of a big thing about this recently. And when I say recently, I mean within the last few years. It's well known among us that, you know, do a lot in this sector that they used to be a 30% discount. I haven't looked at this closely in a while. This is a 15% discount he's referring to. And the idea was probably sound way back in the beginning of the futures exchange when it was probably pretty darned honest. And at that time, the idea was that if you were a wheat farmer and that was your livelihood, you didn't need to put up as much margin because you were a producer as someone that was a speculator. And to me, that makes sense because, you know, farmer's probably running on the credit system and he's borrowed the plant and he hasn't harvested yet and he's using the futures market to hedge his profitability. And so they give him a break, the futures exchange. So to me, the basis of it at the beginning was pretty sound. Well, now it's been distorted. But the idea at the beginning was if you were a producer, so if you're a producer of copper, you didn't have to put up as much margin. And again, I think at the beginning, it was probably a sound idea. It's been, again, I'm repeating, distorted like crazy. And as I just read, just about anybody, and this is what I really don't like about the metals, but my point being, and this is, you know, Chris and I are friends and we don't see eye to eye on everything. They just really don't like technical analysis whatsoever at all. I believe it's a useful tool most of the time, but not perfect. Anyway, this is no big surprise. I mean, what he's written here, I think most people aren't aware of. But again, those are deeply involved in all aspects of any given market. Understand that this has been this way for quite some time. Is it fair? No. Does it meet its original intent? No. Is it moral? Probably not. But this is the idea. And what really is kind of funny to me, and he emphasized in bold, governments and central banks, is, you know, who cares if they get a 15% discount on the margin requirement when they can print infinite amount of money? I mean, it makes it kind of ridiculous. But anyway, end the comment on that. Let me find something about silver and we'll close it out for this week. Silver has been in the doldrums for quite some time, as I'm well aware, as anyone would expect. But here you see Yahoo Finance with an interesting headline here. Silver price forecast. Silver markets exploded to the upside on Friday. Oh, really? Silver markets bounced rather significantly from the $15 level during the day on Friday. This is last Friday now, or the one, you know, doing this update after the close of the markets, obviously. However, we were already trading around the 15-17 by the time the announcement was released. They talked about the jobs. The report came out and silver bounced up. And it's a pretty small bounce. And until we see this gold-silver ratio come down well into the low 70s, I'm not convinced that this next leg up in the bull market for precious metals is really going to take off. And that's what I'm waiting to see. One of the things I'm waiting to see. What I will comment on, however, is that a lot of the equities are doing quite well. I'll be doing an update for our members here after I get done with this. And we're very happy with three of our majors that are doing extremely well. One that we just put on the list, which is a silver company, had some huge additions to some of their drilling that was pretty outstanding. One of the others that we have had on the list for a while, but not too long, also had some very good news. So basically, very comfortable with the stock picking that we're doing. We did update the portfolio in the March edition that I showed you just the first page of, and just getting it better and better. I mean, the whole idea here is to find the absolute best performing, lowest risk throughout the sector, top tier, mid tier, and speculative, so that you can do well in the sector. So that's it. I'll be back with you next week with another update or weekly perspective.
This is the Morgan Report with David Morgan. For the latest in precious metals investing, gold, silver, the economy, and more, go to themorganreport.com.